I think they're all great experiences for these young kids, and every opportunity you can to even touch on history. And because one thing these guys are shielded from now, they don't go to work anymore, so they don't have a lot of experiences outside your footy club. Our responsibility is to help make these players better people also.
Look, it's a big game, obviously, an Anzac Eve clash that we and Melbourne are looking to have, you know, on a regular basis, and, you know, Ron Barassi will be lighting the cauldron before the game. It does bring upon the eyes of all Australians, and for a very special reason in an Anzac Day weekend, but one we're looking forward to taking on the challenge. And, you know, we're really disappointing in the corresponding game last year, so we're looking to make sure we set off and atone for that loss of last year.
There's Damien Hardwick and Paul Roos talking ahead of Friday night's Anzac Eve clash, and Brendan Gale joins the CEO of the Tigers. G'day, Brendan.
Morning, KB.
Brendan, of course, this is Anzac Eve, and this is a game that you hope is going to go forward into the future.
Oh, I think that's a hope, KB. Yeah, look, both clubs have been discussing this for the AFL for several years. I mean, all clubs look for ways to recognise their military history, and, you know, all clubs make great contributions to conflict and... in Melbourne in particular, lost more players in World War One than any other club. So, we've both looking for ways to recognise that, and we thought Anzac Eve could be a significant part of the AFL calendar going forward. And, you know, we're pleased that the AFL has seen fit to fixture us accordingly this year.
If that is part of the AFL calendar, are you talking always playing Melbourne?
Look, I think so, KB. Yes, is the short answer. Look, we're the original co-tenant of the MCG. Melbourne have been there from day dot, of course. And as I said, there is a shared history between the clubs. The MCG were barracks during the wars. Melbourne was based at Punt Road for a period of time during the wars. So, look, I think there is that shared history, and the MCG is an important part of the puzzle. So that would be our intention, yeah.
Tragically, 35 men who played for Melbourne and Richmond died from active service, either in World War One or World War Two. In fact, 30 of those players came from Melbourne. So they've got an unbelievable history going back to that First World War. Ron Barassi is going to be involved. Just tell us what's planned for this Anzac Eve game. My understanding is the MCG is going to be in darkness and Ron Barassi is going to light a cauldron.
Yeah, look, there'll be a whole sort of pre-match program, and we've consulted extensively with the RSL and Major General Dave McLaughlin just to make sure, you know, they were very comfortable with it. So we'd really encourage fans to get there by 7:15. That's when the program will commence. We've got a whole range of activities will roll out. But, yeah, I guess the feature will be the eternal flame from the shrine will be used to light a torch, will be transferred to the MCG, and ultimately be lit by Ron. And, of course, you know, he's a huge figure in our game, and, you know, he lost his father in World War Two. So, you know, we think it's fitting that on this occasion, you know, Ron Barassi would be involved in that.
I know for certain that you'd make a call for all Tiger fans, but also all Melbourne fans, to get to the MCG on Friday night, because obviously this is a special pre-game ceremony with Ron being involved, and it's going to take place about 7:15, and I'm certain all the fans will want to be in. They don't want to miss that.
No, as I said, look, we think it could become a very significant part of the calendar. It's an opportunity for both clubs to celebrate military history, but also Anzac Day itself. And one of the call to actions is to get people to dawn services, you know, around the country, and I guess highlight that. I guess the other thing shouldn't be forgotten, KB, it's going to be a cracking game as well. Mm. So, Melbourne have been really competitive this year, and they actually got us last year. And we're coming off a win. So on a Friday night, a big stage, we think it's going to be a ripping contest as well.
Well, I saw Melbourne last week against Adelaide, and they were very good. It was very poor conditions over at Adelaide Oval as well. But they were very, very competitive. Are you happy with the way the Tigers have played this year, first 3 weeks?
Look, I think it's really hard to tell. I think you need to get 6-7 rounds in to really, you know, get a good read on where you're situated. Look, I think our starts have been reasonably ordinary this year. So in that respect, a Saturday night at the Gabba was encouraging. I think we've been a little bit off, and in this competition, as ruthless as it is, when you are, you'll get beaten, and that certainly happened to us against the Bulldogs. They were the better side on the day and deserved their win. We're disappointed at performance, but we've got to come ready to play from the very first bounce, because if you're not, as I said, it makes it really tough.
Well, the last quarter against Brisbane was very, very good, and Greg Swan's going to join us very shortly as well, but it was a big win over Brisbane, but Melbourne have been very, very competitive. What about Alex Rance, Brendan? What's the story about Alex Rance? May retire from football at the end of this year. A lot of us thought that maybe he was going to be pursued by other clubs, but it seems that he likes to pursue other ventures as well. Can you tell us what they are, and is there any truth in this? Have you had a chat to him since that came out?
Look, I only learnt on Friday, KB, to be honest. It was news to me, and it was something we didn't obviously want to raise 24 hours before the game with Alex. So, look, we've always been confident that, Alex is very, very happy here. You know, loves the place, and you know, so I've never thought he was at risk of leaving to go to another club. I think that was you know, an issue at all. But you know, Alex is his own man, and you know, we've received no indication that he's not considering playing beyond this year. You know, in life, KB, we have ups and downs, and sometimes you want to be doing something different, but certainly that's not reflecting the way Alex is playing. He's playing with great, great passion and conviction and great competitiveness. So on that basis, you know, we're confident that you know, Alex will be an Richmond jumper for years to come.
So you're happy that it's not another club that's in his ear at the moment?
Oh, look, you know, I'm sure most clubs wouldn't be doing their job unless they're making inquiries of certain players, but we're confident that you know, he's very happy with the Richmond Football Club. He's a very important part of our team and our future, and so he should be. And as I said before, and that's just manifest simply in the way he's playing with us at the moment, which is at a very high level.
He's probably the most important player for the club because, you know, in the midfield you've got Cochin, you've got Martin, you've got Delidio, you've got Alisson, you've got a number of guys able to play in the midfield. But, you know, to get a crack defender like Alex Rance, who he makes the Richmond back line run. He's one of those such an attacking player who plays the ball on its merits that he makes the other players around him proactive. And
yeah,
from that point of view, he's probably the most important player that the club has.
Yeah, structurally, he's very important, Kevin. I mean, first, he defends. I mean, that's his core responsibility. He's a defender that defends and can play one-on-one and beat his man more often than not. But offensively, he gives us so much more. And that's part of his game that has really developed over the last few years. And, you know, he runs to the right spots and, you know, wins the ball and makes great decisions. So, you know, it's a credit to our development team as well and the coach he works with. But, no, he's certainly an important player you know, he's playing very, very well, and we expect that he'll continue to be a valuable player for Richmond for years to come.
Brendan Gala's joined us. Brendan, we had some messages come through yesterday saying Brett Lidio's had a setback with his calf and he's going to miss the next 4 or 5 weeks. Can you can confirm or deny that he's had a setback?
Well, I'm not sure whether he's had a setback, KB, but, you know, calves are notoriously fickle and they take a little longer than anticipated to completely recover. So, you know, I mean, Brett would be no better than 50-50 this week, perhaps a little worse. Yeah, he'd probably be doubtful for this week, but beyond that, I'm not really sure.
And I did feel sorry for Chris Knights, just watching him on the weekend and the commentators talking about his first game and, you know, maybe a couple of years, and he's had so many injuries since he's been to Tigerland. I think he was only playing his sixth game. Now he's had a serious hamstring injury and needs an operation.
Oh, it looks really cruel, KB. I mean, there's not a more deserving fellow than Chris. He's so professional and he's got such a strong work ethic and, you know, he adds run and carry and he's a goal kicker. So he adds something really important to us, and you know, he hit the scoreboard again on Saturday night, and if any bloke needs a bit of luck, it's Chris. And you know, what we thought was perhaps a 3 to 4 week injury is now a tendon injury. He's going to take 10 to 12 weeks. So he's got exceptional character. It's another road hump, and I'm sure he'll be capable of working through it.
What did you make? Brendan Gale joins us, Richmond CEO of Trent Cotchin, had the spotlight put on by some of the media last week to deliver a level of consistency in terms of, you know, the way that, you know, a lot of possessions but going nowhere. I noticed on the weekend that Tigers had 403 possessions on the weekend and kicked 20-odd goals. The week before against the Bulldogs had exactly the same number of possessions, 403, and kicked 9 goals. So was there a little bit of truth in the fact that the Tigers were a little bit wasteful against the Bulldogs and players took the long route?
Oh, no, I don't think... You know, I don't think our style of play against the Bulldogs, I don't think a lot's been made of it, was that bad. I think it was okay. In fact, all the indicators we value were pretty strong, except our ability to win the ball off the ground inside 50 and put tackles. Well, basically, when we went inside 50, we couldn't score. Our conversion rate was very, very poor. So I think a lot was made of it. But look, you know, Trent hit the scoreboard. I mean, we love midfielders who can kick goals, KB. I'm sure you concur with that. So
can't be a great midfielder unless you kick goals.
So he, you know, hit the scoreboard twice. He's great forward pressure. You know, he got a lot of his footy forward to centre. So, look, you know, we're subject to great scrutiny, players, more so today than ever. And you know, whether you know, that impacted Trent, or so, I don't really know, but you know, he's a very important player.
In terms of, say, Trent Koch and leadership, how do you see that unfolding and developing at the moment? Because on the weekend, we've seen Luke Hodge, 44 disposals and dominant for the Hawks, and Joel Selwood, of course, people just raved about his game on the weekend. I was one of them, got Geelong over the line against the Gold Coast. There's been criticism of Carlton's leadership group and Mark Murphy not being strong enough at the moment. How have you seen the development of Trent Koch and the leadership group down at Tigerland?
Oh, I think it's really developing, KB, and I think some of those players you mentioned, I guess, had the luxury of establishing their own careers and, you know, having a strong sort of coterie of leaders around them. We probably didn't have that luxury with, you know, Chris Newman did a wonderful job and you know, he's captain of 22. But I think last year was a great experience for our Trent and our leadership group. And, you know, the last 9 games, we were able to sort of win back momentum. You know, we gave up leads, but got it back. And I think it was a credit to our leadership group and the ability to impact contests and, you know, Trent in particular. So I think it's evolving. And the older they get and the longer they play together, the stronger they get.
Won a lot of close games last year to get to win those last 9 games. They weren't easy games to win. A lot of those games had to be won in tight situations.
Yeah, and the stakes were pretty great. I mean, you drop one and we're basically out. So I think that period was a really rich learning experience for us. And ultimately, it was a really bad result in the final. But the journey to get there and the experience for our players and the leadership group, I think, was very, very rich.
And just finally, Tigers strong and bold in 2015. Always 1300 Richmond, or you can go to richmondfc.com.au to buy a membership. 67,500 members already down at Tigerland. Do you see the day when Richmond will go past Hawthorn and Collingwood?
Oh, look, possibly, KB. I mean, I'm less focused on the number and I'm more focused on the quality of the relationship. If we can give our members a really strong experience and service them, make them feel part of our club, you know, I think the numbers will take care of themselves. So I'm less focused on the number, but more, I guess, on the connection we have and our members. And I think the connection we have and I guess the trust that we've built up over the last few years is very, very strong.
Mm. So what's the target this year?
Well, we'd love to get to 70. 70,000. And I think we're a realistic chance of achieving it. So, you know, obviously we'd encourage our members to get on board, sign up. You know, it's our second home game this Friday night, so get along, 7:15, Friday night footy at the G. It's going to be fantastic.
And just finally, my understanding is the fans are actually going to be provided with individual lights and they're going to be part of the ceremony to light up the G.
They are, KB. So 50,000 finger lights will be provided on the seats and our members and attendees will be given a chance to participate in the pre-game festivities, and they're provided by AGL, a valuable corporate partner. So it'll be a wonderful sight.
Brendan, good luck with that on Anzac Eve with Richmond taking on Melbourne. It's going to be a great night, and you know, we're looking forward to a great performance. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, mate.
Brendan Gale. Now, this Friday night, it's from 7:15, so you want to get there for the start of all the ceremonies that are taking place. There's a performance by the Rising Suns, the Australian Army Band. There's the delivery of a flame from the Shrine of Remembrance on horseback. The lighting of the flame on stage by Ron Barashi. There's the observance, of course, of the last post and minute silence, and also the Australian National Anthem. And as Brendan just told us, fans are going to be given individual lights and asked to help light up the G for the night and the ceremony as well.